Welcome. My name is Hal Christensen. My company is Christensen Roberts Solutions, and we do development and consulting work in the area of electronic performance support systems, human performance technology, e-learning, variety of other types of things. What I want to do today is give you a presentation which is very much a conceptual type of presentation. It's not going to be a case study of one particular project that we've carried through, but rather I want to get across a couple of concepts which I think are extremely important for us, important for those of us who are involved in ISPI, because much of what you're hearing at the conference is that movement towards human performance technology and what that means. And what I want to do is ultimately introduce a concept that I refer to as training wheels, which is similar to training wheels on a bicycle, and compare that concept with training courses and advantages and disadvantages of that. And then I want to show some examples of that. I want to get a lot of discussion going because this is really something that is not a lecture. It's really a discussion. I want your thoughts on how you react to things and where you think this concept fits in, how you might be able to use something along this line. Then I want to expand that. I want to sort of motorize the training wheels. I'm going to start mixing metaphors, and somewhere along the line, I'm going to get into high hurdles and tracks, and the track and field, and ultimately wind up with some frogs. So somehow, I'm going to try at the end get the frog on the bicycle going over the hurdles. And if I do that, okay, then you'll understand where I am. Okay, I've been a member of involved with ISPI for 25 years. Despite my youthful appearance. As someone said to me yesterday, it looks like you've been around the block in this field. And I said, I've been around the block many times, but I still haven't found a parking place. But the parking place that I have always found, I think, is moving towards the concept of concept of performance. When I first joined ISPI, it was actually NSPI. And those of you who have been around for a while know the N changed to I from national to international. And the PI changed from performance and instruction to performance improvement. What is the implication of that in terms of where this group is going and where we think, and many of us believe, we ought to be going in terms of how we can provide support within our organizations? What's the implication of that, moving from performance and instruction to performance improvement? What does it say to you?
It takes the focus away from purely
instructional intervention. Away from purely instructional interventions. Anybody else? Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Very good. So basically what we're saying is that instruction is not the goal of what we're after. Performance is the goal of what we're after. This is basically what we're looking to do. But if you look at our organizations, and maybe your training organization, your company, or the companies that you do work for might be a little different, but as we look at it, we begin to see that there are some problems in the current approaches. Okay. So, based on what you've been saying, what we're looking at is say, what is the more important goal for your organization? Is it to have highly trained employees, or is the goal to have employees who perform with a high level of competence and productivity? Well, obviously what we're saying is, it's not the former, it's the latter. But in today's organizations, what's happening? If you look at the way organizations are going in training departments, they put in what? They put in their learning management system. They have their nice LMS. What that does is to keep track of all the courses that someone takes, makes it easy to enroll in the courses. There's a test that you take at the end. It's all SCORM compliant so that all these things can be put into the learning management system. all that is controlled. Maybe there's a content management system authoring part that's with it, so all the courses have to be authored within the same structure. And what are we building? We are building a greater number of well-managed training courses than ever before. But in reality, there is very little evidence this has had any significant impact on the employee's competence, performance, or productivity. Because what we are doing is saying what the goal is the amount of courses that we provide. And I've heard CLOs talk to groups and say, wow, last year we managed to enroll 625,000 different courses that people took. Wow! 25 years ago, this was butts and seats kind of philosophy that we did with classroom training. We sort of got away from that, and we're sort of making progress by the mid-90s. All of a sudden, now we're back into the world in which what is training? Training is what is the learning and development area? It is delivery of training courses. And we're not finding that it really is having any effect on productivity. In fact, we're not really measuring it, because what are we measuring? We're measuring how they did on the test, and 75% of the people got 95 and above, and they got question number two right and this one wrong, da-da-da-da-da. All information has nothing to do with how does somebody do the job. Secondly, at the same time, what organizations have been doing, in case you haven't noticed, they've been trying to squeeze as much of the cost out of the training area. You may have noticed there's probably a few less trainers nowadays than there were 4 or 5 years ago. Okay, what are they being replaced by? Well, you no longer, training departments are more rarely developing programs. What they're doing now is basically administering the learning management system, the off-the-shelf courses, whatever, because they're making it so that that's what the function is. And so even though we squeezed all the cost out of that, and we're starting talking about return on investment, basically the return on investment that people are looking at is, well, we really cut down the cost of the training department, so we're producing our training courses with far more efficiency than we did before. Of course, the fact that training courses aren't doing anything is beside the point. But what we're doing is cutting it there, but we still haven't been able to bring workers up to competent performance. And I think we have to take a look at really how this works out. These are not precise scientific charts here, by the way, but just a conceptual framework here. If you had a need, it was classified as a training need, someone needs to learn something, or someone needs to do a particular job. If there were no training whatsoever, if you did absolutely nothing, which no organization is going to do, if you did absolutely nothing, then what do you have? You have the business, you'd have cheap training costs. Wow, what a nice training budget you'd be able to present to this CEO. We don't spend any money on training. But what happens is that all the cost then on the business side of getting somebody up to competent performance is going to occur in what? The incompetence costs. It's going to occur in trial and error, searching, asking people, calling help desk, making mistakes, correcting mistakes, and so forth. This is unacceptable. Nobody's going to do that, obviously. You don't do that, do you? Anybody have a training department that exists of zero budget? Okay. At least we've gotten past that part. And if we add training, if the training is reasonably good, what do? We have certainly reduced the cost. We've increased the training cost, yes, now we have a training budget, but we've reduced the cost of the incompetence, reduced the cost of the mistakes, because we're making fewer and fewer mistakes because people have been trained. Now, can we say there's a direct correlation so that 100% of what you learn in the training classes you're going to be able to apply on the job, and so we've eliminated the incompetence? I mean, what figures do you see? The figure I see all the time is that you forget 70% of what you learned in the training course within a two-week period of time, or the training courses have a half-life of 5 days or something of that sort. Okay. Anybody argue with that? I mean, it's basic kind of thing. So there's a lot of leakage. You lose a lot of the training. But if you look at the cost, you say, well, we've really cut down the cost, so we've made a real significant impact. This is ROI. Boy, look what we've done. But what are we missing? What factor is not included here if we're looking at this in terms of a business cost to your organization? What does it cost your organization to do what is basically taking somebody away from productive work, putting them in a training course or take a training course so that they can learn how to be more productive if and when they ever get back to the job to do the work that they're hired to do? The real cost of training often winds up being the productivity cost, the cost of pulling somebody away from what they're doing in order to be able to learn how to do what they're supposed to be doing. There was an interesting presentation yesterday by Tony O'Driscoll, and if you've any of you saw that. Tony's a very bright guy with IBM. And he was talking about a project he had done years ago with Nortel. And he took a training request. The training request was, we need to get our engineers to be more innovative and come up with more innovative ideas that we can sell to our clients. And he turned that into a business problem and came up with a solution that's much better in terms of capturing the innovations that the engineers already had and turning them into something that would be productive proposals. But he said, when we went to somebody asked a question about the cost of this, and he said, well, when we went to talk about the cost, we focused on that cost, because the cost of doing that training program, if you add in the cost of taking those engineers away from their job in order to take this training course, wound up being more than what the solution that he put together, which was far more effective, actually was. And he said if the training department went to them, put in together a proposal, they would not include the cost of the time spent in training, because if we do that, we find that what we do is extremely inefficient. How many of you in your organizations really figure in time spent in training? You do. Some do, some don't. But you really have to. Many people don't. But even if you do or don't, the issue is you still have a lot of time that's spent in the training. But as we move forward, in the face of growing information overload, I heard a figure that by the year 2010, the amount of available information and knowledge in the world will double every 11 minutes. So in a training course model, that means every 10 minutes you have a one-minute refresher course, all the stuff that you didn't know. So the training model, the training course model, really allow itself to be adapted to this type of situation where things are going to be changing constantly and new knowledge is going to be necessary? No, because you're going to have to increase the number of courses, and the more you increase the number of courses, you're spending more time here, becoming more and more inefficient and increasing the business cost. What happens is customers demand more and more self-service. What if we had to do a training program for everybody who pumped their own gas, or everybody used an ATM, or used something online? You can't use the training course model for that. You've got to find ways in which you're going to enable people to do what they need to do without having to take a training program or course, whether it's classroom or e-learning or whatever it might be, without having to take something in order to be able to learn how to do it. People are going to have to learn, be able to do something without learning first. So the goal that we want to get is there a way in which we can enable people to do their work and keep the costs of development somewhere around the same, but drive down those two larger factors on the right-hand side, to both drive down the incompetency, the still what's left over from the training, from the leakage, from the lack of transfer of something from the training class to the workplace, the trial and error. We can reduce that even more so that people make fewer and fewer mistakes. And if we could reduce the training time so that you could almost begin to do the work without having to have prior training, we have made a major significant impact on the business cost within our organization. Now when you talk in return on investment, it's a much different picture, because you no longer have all those costs on the right-hand side. So we need some way to do that. We need to find approaches that will maximize return on investment by driving down the cost of competent performance, by driving down the cost of incompetence, and the cost of employees' non-productive learning time. And here is the solution. Every one of you gets one of those, and you're right. What do we have here? We have a bicycle, and we have training wheels. Somebody used training wheels lately, or a child that's used training wheels lately? What's the concept of the training wheels? How does that work? Okay, it's until you learn to balance. So you have a bicycle, you have a... What age do children learn to ride a bicycle? 4, 5, 6? 2, 1, I don't know. Okay, you have a child, you have the training wheels. So what's the process? You get the training wheels, you hook them on to the rear end of the bike. Okay? And then what? Then you send them to a training class on bicycles with videos and so on, and a test at the end. What do you do? What happens at that point? You help them to learn. You put the child on the bike. The child starts to ride. What do the training wheels do? help keep the balance. What does it prevent? Falling off, all the scraped knees, all the tears, all the, I can't, well, we've all been through that. But that's the concept. You lock the training wheels onto the bike, put the child on the bike, show her how to pedal and steer, let her ride. She learns as she rides. She's learning steering, she's learning these other things. As she is riding, she didn't take that class and put the test score into the LMS to certify that she could get onto the bicycle. And lets the training wheels help her keep her balance. And as she goes along, she learns balance. And at some point, she removes the training wheels when she's ready. So we've created an environment, an interface that will prevent or greatly reduce the chance of error, the scraped knees. We allow learning to occur in the act of doing rather than prior, and it can occur in the act of doing because we've eliminated the danger of making the serious mistake of merely tipping over and hurting yourself. And we allow learning to occur implicitly. Because once you've done that, her learning is going to be as the process of riding, not so much by any kind of explicit explanation of how to do things, but since she's up and riding, she will learn the steering and a variety of other things because she is learning it in the process of doing it. And it's not stated, it's not something she has to memorize, a course or a manual. It is something that she learns implicitly in the process of doing it. Okay. I want to do a demonstration here of this concept. Okay. For a form. This is a tax form. This is for the United States, by the way. So I don't imagine you Canadians pay taxes, so you probably don't have to worry about it. And this is a form that an employer needs to fill out for employees to whom they give some sort of a distribution at the end of the year. It could be annuity, it could be a pension, it could be an IRA, that's an individual retirement account for folks from Canada, and SEP, a variety of other kinds of instruments it could be, that an employer would have to record on this form and send it to the IRS. I just chose this because it's a typical example of an application or form or test that needs to be done. Now, if you were to look at this as, let's say, a job in your organization, and let's say you had a number of people who needed to learn to do that. It's not going to be the case, but let's assume that were the case with this. You could start with the instructions on how to do this, and these are double-sided, by the way, well-written, as all United States tax form instructions are. And I think they have the same ghostwriter, I think. And you could see, okay, well, what do I do with the first field and the second field? And if it's an IRA, I have to do this. And if it's a SEP, I have to do this and so forth. And, you know, I can memorize all this. And we can imagine a training program in which you're sitting people down. Somebody came to the training department and said, oh, my people can't do this form. We got to get this thing done. They come to you and say, ah, training course. Okay, let's take this. Let's spend some time studying it. We'll put it all together, put together a nice training course. We'll take them maybe a day or half a day or whatever time you want to pick in order to go through and develop the training course. Okay. The concept of training wheels starts from a different end. Concept of training wheels says, can we lock some wheels onto this, enable somebody to sit down and do the job without having training first? Now, is there anybody here who really doesn't like to fill out income tax forms? Somebody? You don't? Okay. Can I have you as a volunteer? Okay. I want you to come up. And you know, you might want to study this carefully for a minute and come sit down here. Let me get you set up here. This is what we've done is take this form and we set up on top of it using a new application called ActiveGuide. And what ActiveGuide does is really provide an interface in between the application and the user so that the user is actually interacting with both the application but also with this other interface. And what we're doing with the interface is seeing if we can make a way in which someone can actually use the form without having any expertise. Okay, so Matthew here, I'm going to go through these introductory screens. So this dialog box is what we put on top of the form. But this is a live form. And we're just going to go through here and set him up. And we're going to have Matthew do an IRA for now. And first we're going to do is a step-by-step guide. So this comes up with dialog box. It says, okay, I'm going to walk you through the fields to help you complete this IRA, the individual retirement account distribution. They're suggesting, we got here in our demo, recipients 55 years, distribution 4,500. Let's get something different. Any number will do. What do you think is a good distribution? Give me a number. 2,000, 3,000, somebody.
10,000,
okay. We're going to use 10,000. And how old is the person that we're going to be filling this out for?
30?
Okay, 30. 30-year-old, $10,000. Okay, so if you click the OK, Matthew. Okay, now, this is telling him first field is gross distribution and what he has to put in there. Yeah, he's going to put in $10,000. But click around on the screen on some of the other boxes. The only box he can click in is this box. Even Matthew can't make a mistake. No, I'm sorry. So he's going to put in $10,000. Okay. Okay, and then click OK. Click the use the mouse in. Okay. Now the only one he can do is this one. In other distributions, you might skip this field and go to the other one. The real issue if you've got about 13 fields on the right hand side, and each one of these different distributions use different fields. Or a different combination of fields. IRA, we have to do this one. And tells him that the tax amount is the same as the gross distribution. Well, Matthew's a little confused on that. He makes a mistake. He doesn't put in 10,000, he puts in something else. So put in something besides 10,000. Yeah, in there, yeah.
Put something else.
Yeah, 8,000, fine. Then he clicks okay. No, Matthew, you made a mistake. It has to be the same. The system didn't tell us that. We put something on top, the training wheels, that won't let him do anything other than to make sure it's the same amount because that's what the IRA requires. Okay, so he's going to change that. Okay. Where's he going to go next? Well, the only place he can go that we're going to let him go is to click in that box. Now he has to make a decision. Is the person under 59 and a half or over 59 and a half? We said he was 30. Asking again to make sure. Didn't make a mistake. Okay. Thank you, Matthew. You just completed the form. That's it. What have we done? We have created an environment where you couldn't make a mistake. We've got you up and got you on the bicycle pedaling away. Now, what happens if you do after you do five of these IRAs? You are going to know how to do an IRA, and you have not had any explicit training whatsoever. If you go back to my graph, what happens to the stuff on the right-hand side? Our cost of incompetency is gone. The cost of training, of taking someone away from their job to do this, is gone. You think you can make a business case for this? Yeah. It's called Active Guide. It's an Active Guide, and the company is Rocket Tools. And it's the first of many tools that will be doing much the same thing, I'm sure, over the next few years. and this, obviously, this deals with applications here, but and that's what this is geared for. But what you're going to find, what I'm suggesting, is that as we begin to explore this concept, you're going to find more and more tools like this, and we need to find more and more ways we can start moving from just doing it within system applications to other options. Yeah. Question? Where does the learning take place? Well, the learning takes place where? Right in the job where the person is doing it. When does it take place? When they're actually doing it. When does it start? at the moment you sit down and start to do the work. How does the learning happen? Well, it happens implicitly as you go through it. You do it a few times, you've done it. Is there more or less learning than any other way? Well, it's probably more, but certainly not much different. Are there more, fewer errors? Certainly there's no errors. We've eliminated that. When is the competence achieved? It's competence achieved immediately. And where are the cost savings? We've already discussed that. Okay. So let's have some discussion. How can we apply the training wheels concept to other situations? What we have here, what we've seen. Let me go back. Is we've applied it to a particular situation. We've applied it to a application. And fairly straightforward, even though there are a lot of ways of going through the path. It was fairly straightforward. Okay. Think for a moment. Let's discuss where you think other places this fits in, what kinds of situations, and where do you think that there are some limitations on where this would or would not work. Now, I think it's a broader concept. Right. I mean, this becomes like a mentor. But outside the application, you see some applications where maybe this would not work, where this obviously works on this particular form. How can this be extended beyond that? What's the implication? Are there types of jobs where you don't think this could work, or other types of computer jobs, related computer-mediated jobs, for which this might not be effective? Yeah, I mean, if you're going in for open heart surgery, this is not what you want to I don't think this is right. Obviously, there's certain things that you don't want. There's certain things where the act of having a human being it can be important to the to that process. Yeah. Yeah. We've been trying to expand this. I mean, because I think the concept is important. But obviously, this is not an easy thing to do, and it's a stage where people are beginning to do some more thinking about it. I want to show a couple of different examples of the concept. One that comes somewhat similar to this, but a different type of application. Another that's not really computer-mediated application, but it's we're using a similar type of concept. Not getting quite as strong with the training wheels, but getting close. Right. One was a project that we did for. This is a project that we did for. Cendant. Cendant is the parent company of, and their real estate franchise group is the parent company of ERA, Coldwell Banker, and Century 21, and Sotheby's Real Estate. They're all under one umbrella. And they just put in a new application, a lead router application. And what they were trying to address originally was that they wanted to be able to start to capture leads coming in from the internet. So you go on the site of a local broker who's affiliated with ERA, let's say, and you see a house that you're interested in, and you click and you send an email automatically to that broker. What's happening in most cases is that sits in somebody's mailbox for 3 or 4 days before somebody finally takes a look at it and realizes it's there, and they call you back and you've already moved on. What the lead router application will do will take that call, immediately stick it into this lead router software. And then 30 seconds later, an agent out on the golf course will get a cell phone call and say, there's a lead, this is the nature of the lead person, here's the phone call to call what they're interested in. And while you're still sitting there in your pajamas in front of the computer screen in your home, a minute later you're going to get a phone call from an agent who's immediately responded to them. It's also going to then route all of the leads within an organization, so not only ones that come in from the internet, but telephone calls and any other inquiries or walk-ins and so on. But there's a lot to think about doing that, because you have to decide how you're going to configure that. If that agent who gets the call on the golf course isn't there and it goes into his voicemail, how long do you wait for him? Or do you route it to the next guy? And who do you route it to? And what's the routing structure? And if it's someone needs to speak a particular language, how do you set it up so it goes to the person who speaks that language? You have a whole setup, configuration that you have to figure out how to organize your business to fit into what this software application is going to allow you to do. You can't just guess at this. You've got to think about it. I've got to think about who's going to get the leads first, how am I going to route it, what's the cycling I'm going to do through that process. What we are doing for them is saying, okay, we're going to help you with that part of it. Now, we're not dealing right now with the whole lead router application, what it does, but just that part of the setup. And the way they were going to do it originally was to take business analysts and spend about an hour and a half on the phone with each of the brokers, and there are thousands of these brokers out there, each of these brokers, and say, okay, we're going to walk you through and tell you what you need to put in and give us what information you need to give us, and we'll put it in together, and then we'll set it up, configure your lead router application. And they came to us and say, well, we've only got 6 business analysts, and if we're going to have thousands of these things and some of these phone calls, and each one is going to take an hour, hour and a half, we're going to be overburdened. We're not going to be able to deal with it. Can we do something more on a self-serve? Can we at least cut down? We're not going to eliminate the business analyst's ultimate phone conversation with the broker, but if we can get the broker to do more self-serve and to put in a lot of this information, think about and make the decisions, then the role of the analyst is to check over what they've done, make sure they've done what they want to do, check and clarify and so forth, and reduce the phone call between the business analyst and the broker from an hour and a half to 20 minutes. Significant savings of time. So the challenge here is not how to fill out this form, because you just go down and fill out the form. That's not the issue. The issue is, how do I configure it? What decisions do I make? What are the decisions? The form is only a repository of the thinking process that the broker has to do. So it's not how to fill out the form. This is not like the IRS thing. We had to figure out how to fill out the form. This is a simple fill out. What do I put into it? And so again, we built an interface in between the two. And so on the left-hand side, we have all of the different areas that you need to configure, that the broker needs to configure. And on the right-hand side is this form. And so we even actually modified the form and made it a lot easier for them to figure out. But still, it's not the issue of how do you do go from A to B in the form, it's the information that you need to put in. So let's take something like the lead filtering criteria. And this goes down, scrolls down the form, again pops up a dialog box, and explaining what you need to do in order to set up your criteria. In other words, it's going to be a system by which the lead router is going to filter through your agents 6 or 7 times, each time looking for the best available agent who meets certain criteria. Well, what are those criteria and which ones does it go through? If it can't find anybody at the first criteria, it goes on to the second and third and so on. You've got to set up how you want that to go. What are the criteria that are least important? So if I can't find somebody, let's not worry about it. Let's get on to the next one. And what are the criteria that are so important? Let's say language. I don't want somebody who can't speak Spanish to get certain phone calls. That must be a match, and I'm not going to route it to anybody if I can't find someone who speaks Spanish. Well, you've got to think, the broker has to think through all these things. And basically, we're providing an easier way to go through that. And I'm not going to try to show all of this or go into that, but if they want additional information, we can provide additional information. And firstly, it's basically telling you that you have to decide which ones are the ones that must match. And if you can't find somebody in this criteria, then you move on. And so that's called the must match. And let's say we want must match for geographical area, but not for the others. We're walking them through every single question, making sure they understand it. And so now they've decided these are the criteria, the ones that must match, or else we won't route the call. And we automatically do that. Then we brought up another form and saying, okay, you've decided which ones are the must match. Now we're going to ask you to put the priority of the other 4 remaining ones. This is the most important to me. This is the second most important, third most important, the fourth most important. And takes them through, does that, and then gives them an opportunity to check what they have done. So basically, we're explaining to them as they get to the field what it is. But we actually are hiding the form until they've made the decisions, and then we're putting it into the form, because the form has to exist because that is the thing that goes to the business analyst of the form. We try to get rid of the form, but it has to exist. But it's in a way that people can understand it, and we've set up and we've provided a new interface that sits between the other interface, which they couldn't understand, and now it's something like this. So the brokers are able to will be able to do the form, make the basic decisions. The business analyst will go through and say, okay, I want to make sure you did chose this as a must match and that. Is that what you want? Do you understand? Make sure you understand the consequences and so forth. But the broker doesn't have to be on the phone and explain. This is a 10-minute explanation or a 15-minute explanation to any broker, to any broker to explain how you actually fill this thing out. So we've cut through that, but we haven't gotten rid of that level of the business analyst who everybody wants, a human being ultimately to guide it, but we've helped make this self-serve. So you can do this type of thing. It doesn't have to be, how do I go from A to B on a form? How do I fill out the IRS form? Or you've got to fill out this field and this field and this field. You can go to the higher level because you are creating an interface that sits on top. We also put in error checking and error mistakes so they can't do certain kinds of things and make certain mistakes. And then they have the backup of they'll be sitting down with the analyst to make sure they didn't make some other mistakes. So we've created an environment to allow this self-serve, and we've created the environment that gives the knowledge that helps them do it. Now, this only has to be done once. So we're not talking about something that they're going to learn or have to learn. Once you've done it, they don't have to look at this again. So that's part of it. And it's one, certainly, in any time you have that kind of an application or that kind of a job where someone only has to do it once, you really want to give them a training course, forcing them to master it, to go do it once, and then forget about it, whether it's a computer application or anything else. Of course not. Any questions on this? Can you see applications of this type of thing where you can, and in a sense, you could create your own applications. There are a lot of things we have people do. And what they're dealing with, and it's the worst enemy, really, is that we ask people to do things, and this is what we give them. A blank sheet of paper. Whereas if we could give them a form, the sole purpose of the form is sort of an artifact, a repository of the things you need to check and do and make sure that you've got them done. A way of recording, keeping track of certain information so that you can do the job right. That you can then create and provide some support around it, rather than what we do in most jobs. Okay, we're going to teach you how to do something, and give you a blank sheet of paper, and you go ahead and do it. That takes me to another example, which has nothing to do with computer applications. This is something we did for a client from Merrill Lynch. It has nothing to do with computers or filling out a computer form, computer application. This was, they have a situation where they were decentralizing their training process, and learning and development was no longer going to be actively involved in developing learning and development for the business units. That was going to be done by subject matter experts and HR liaisons within the business unit area. So what you had then is the learning and development would become more of a consultant. But the real developers of training, and these were mostly technical training, mostly shorter courses or pieces of small e-learning pieces and so on that would be developed within business, technical areas of business units. But then the issue was, well, these people are not trained instructional designers. What can we do for them? And of course, the first choice is we'll take every one of them, and there are probably a few hundred out there, and we'll send them all to some graduate program on instructional design, and then they'll come back in a year or two, and then they'll be ready to, well, obviously that didn't seem like a wise choice. The other was to run a bunch of courses, but there's a lot of different things that people needed to know, and what you need to know might not be the same thing as someone else needs to know. I mean, it would vary. And how many courses are you going to run? We're going to run a course on you might want to do something on the ADDIE model, analyst design development, that model. But then you might want to do something on how to do training guides, how to do this, how to do instructors guides, how to set up a training module within your class for a three-way discussion group, or how to set up a role play or something. How many of these things are you going to develop as training programs? And what's the cost that just isn't going to pay for itself? So what they looked at is say, well, if we can take the basic ADDIE model and provide that as the flow, as the workflow, the analysis, development, implementation, evaluation, analysis, that model, and if we can then go to these areas, go to the subject matter experts, and find out what they know and don't know, what they want to know, what they are not sure about, what they need to know in order to take from where they are to create training programs. And if we can capture that, and if we can organize it not by here's what you need to know, but organize it by the frequently asked questions, the questions that we got directly from these people who are going to have to do the job. What don't you know? Where are you uncertain about? What do you need us to tell you about? Where are you going to need our kind of support? If we can organize that within that structure as a tool for them, and if we can go one step further and say, okay, then what we're going to give you within that is tools. Tools that will help you do the job, that will guide you through the job. It's not as tight as the training wheels we've set up on the computer applications. It could never be. But we can provide you with guides and templates for all of the things that you're going to need to do. And so we basically did that. So if you went into something like development area of this, and here are the frequently asked questions. How do you negotiate the time needed from subject matter experts and SMEs and development phase? How do I identify outside vendors? These are all questions that came from subject matter experts. How do I write classroom exercise instructions? How do I do this, that, and that type of thing? So all that was organized, and we had the same type of structure set up for all the other phases. And we put together, over here, a large number of resources, tips, how-to, tools, others, and here's a shot of all of these types of resources on various parts of the ADDIE model, analysis, consulting, and so forth. And then we broke them down by the frequently asked question, broke it down into the particular question area where we had short information, and then we had the tools available. So if you were interested in are there templates for creating different types of instructional materials, this would give you some information on that. And here's a list of all the templates that we have available. So here's an instructor guide template tool, and it's going to pop up instructor guide template. And so what you're giving someone is not a blank sheet of paper, but you're giving them something which you've already set up a structure to reduce the chances of them failing. When we start giving people blank sheets of paper, the chances of failure is great. If you said to somebody, I want you to do an instructor's guide, and here's a nice book you can read about how to do an instructor's guide, or an instructor's guide, here's a sample, here's a template, here's one filled in, show you how it works, and here's a link to some references, what are you going to do? You do that, you then begin by, when do you begin learning? You begin by doing your instructor's guide because that's what you're starting to do. You don't begin by reading the book. You don't begin by taking the course. You begin by, I'm going to do instructor's guide. I've got my template. I've got my guide. I've got my link to resources that I need. I'm going to start at the point of doing the work, not start at the point of trying to learn stuff into my head and then do it. There was a very nice session yesterday that Robin Taylor Roth of Century 21 did, and she was talking about evaluation and data and going through the various levels of of evaluation. And she had this nice chart that she worked out, and she showed an example of how at level one you put down who your stakeholders are, what their concerns are, what kind of data you need to gather to meet stakeholders' demands and concerns at that level, what the findings were in your data from your analysis, what potential solutions for any problems that you might have. It's a nice guide. Here's one filled out, sample. And then what did she give you at the end? At the end, she basically gave you also a blank one, all structured and all set up. So that when you start to do an analysis like this of your data, you start with this. And you start with her example, and you're halfway there. You don't start with, oh, how do I get Word to format what it is that I want to do? But too often we do our training and do our, we don't think in terms of tools. There's a great quote from Buckminster Fuller. You remember Buckminster Fuller? invented the geodesic dome and a variety of other things. Very strange character. But he has a great quote and says, if I want to teach someone to think differently, I don't teach them to think differently. I give them a tool, the use of which will require that they think differently. A lot of what we're doing here is giving people tools that require that you think in the way you need to get them to think in order to do the job you want to do, rather than trying to give them a blank sheet of paper and forcing them to start thinking the way they need to do. Well, that's a perfect, in fact, I like that analogy because it's one I use. Is that if an organization in its restrooms has an issue and says, well, we've got a problem is that with sanitation, and we're not getting everyone to, not everyone is flushing after they use the facilities. They call in the training department, and they got this great program they're going to put together. They're going to put together on flush training. And we're going to teach everybody how to flush. We're going to take everybody in the organization and go through the flush training. And we got this great video that, you know, that shows the water spinning and that if you're in the north part, north of the equator, it's going to spin this way and south of the equator this way. And it's in flash and we got these animated characters and like that. We got this great training program for you. What's the solution? You put an electric eye on the thing and you solve the problem. Because what is the business problem? The business problem is not that somebody didn't know how to flush. The business problem is that we needed to get the sanity. And we're getting at that, and I want to show quickly some stuff. I want to go through a couple of things here. So we looked at applying that, and we raised a very key issue. I want to raise a question. Can we motorize the training wheels and go even further towards performance? And it's going to go directly into what you're talking about. Because if we look at solving a business problem, and we look at our organization, we can look at it, let's say, an analogy of a race. And in the race, there's a start of a task that needs to be done. There's a finish line. There's a task that needs to be done. There's a finish. And at the end, say it's a 100-meter dash. That's for Canadian folks who use meters here. Otherwise, we'd use the 100-yard dash. You can measure that. So I think the record for a 100-meter dash is something like 9.78 seconds. So you've got a task. It's measurable. The goal for the organization is what? To do that task within the shortest period of time, get everybody capable of doing it in the shortest period of time. Okay. Arbitrary, but just bear with me. Okay. So, let's have a 100-meter race. Who's going to have the faster performer time? This sprinter or this hurdler? Who's going to have the best, fastest time? The sprinter. How much? It's about 2-second difference. What's the business solution? Do we train the hurdler to hurdle better, or do we say this is a hurdle? Let's get rid of the other. What we are doing in our organizations is spending more time doing hurdler training because we feel they've got to teach them how to get over the hurdle that we've laid down for them that nobody wants to change. We're doing hurdle training. I estimate 47.5% of our training is hurdle training in our organizations. I just made that up, but no one has ever stopped me and said that's not true. And I'll keep raising it until somebody says, no, that isn't true. But it's a significant amount. Instead of aiming at the hurdles, a hurdle is an artificial barrier. So many things, jobs in our organizations have artificial barriers. They have interfaces that nobody can figure out. They have processes nobody can figure out. There's nothing, nobody knows what to do with it. And we spend all our time training people how to do those hurdles. And training department doesn't say, what's the business problem? Can we get rid of the hurdle? We say, oh, you want a training program on how to leap over the hurdles? You got it. And what the business really needs is something else. So a hurdle to us in human performance technology is an artificial barrier that stands between the worker and the job they want to do. How many applications stand between, in order to be able to do this, I got to learn how to do this? Instead of saying, well, how can we make it easier and quicker to get through that or knock that down in order to do it, we say, okay, we'll teach you how to do it. What you begin to get is more what you're talking about, is we're training just in case. Because if we knock down the hurdle, somebody's going to say, well, suppose the hurdle just shows up, and I, you know, on April 15th at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. We wind up, and I'm not playing that down, we wind up doing a lot of our training accepting hurdles, and we're afraid to knock down the hurdles because we have to do just in case. Well, just the power may go out or something, or the little thing may happen. And so we spend all of our time, take all of that training time that we showed before, all of the time people had to come out of work and learn how to use these applications or do these tasks, and we're taking them away from doing productive work just in case the power might go out on a Friday afternoon. It's valid, but you can find some ways of trying to prevent that than trying to do what we're doing. So rather than changing the job and focusing on the performance, we're focusing constantly on the performer. How can we change the performer and make the performer hurdle better rather than how can we make it easier to do the performance? In a recent article by Tony O'Driscoll and Jay Cross, they make this estimate. I don't know where I meant to ask Tony where he came up with this, but I'm not sure exactly how scientific it is. But it rings fairly true. It says, workers in most American factories spend just 20% of their time making things. The rest of the time they're dealing with hurdles. Supervisors spend no more than 20% of their time doing the things that appear in their job descriptions. The rest of the time they're doing hurdles. I came with the thought I had the other day is that they're going to be selecting a new pope. You've got to figure out what the criteria of being a new pope. Well, if we do it the way American organizations do, we can have a new pope. In order to be qualified, has to learn how to use, must be able to use Microsoft Office. You know, because that's, you've got to know that in order to be able to do the job. I had someone who went for a job as a training director, was turned down at the initial level because he wasn't expert enough on Microsoft Office. Could he have been a good training director? Yeah, but that would only have been 20% of the job. The rest of the job would be doing stuff that gets in the way, the barrier between him and doing the work. So how can we... Let me add to this, that the training courses themselves are part of the hurdle, because not only do you have to get through that hurdle, but the training courses are going to take more time away from being productive in order to be able to learn how to get over the hurdle. So we're just adding to it. So it's adding to the budget efforts, it's adding to the non-productive time of the workers, because not only non-productive time getting over the hurdle, but learning how to get over the hurdle is part of that non-productive time. Anybody familiar with this? This is a modern version of an old game. I know what game this is. Frogger. Anybody ever play Frogger? You know, Ronnie Frogger expert?
No, I'm not an expert.
What? We know how you spend your time. We know why you only spend 20% of your time on your demo. Here is the frog. And this one was the old Nintendo, that type of thing. It was much more cruder graphics on it. You know, thing. But what's the concept of Frogger? You see this traffic zone. What's the concept of Frogger?
The traffic's moving, and you better hop across the lane
of the
freeway real fast. And when
you
start with it, you better hop on something.
She spends a lot of time on this. So you have to move, use it with the cursor key, the up arrow. You have to move the frog across the track, except the traffic is moving. So you have to judge when this car is coming so that you can, before you jump on here, or else you're going to have a nice flat and froggy pretty quickly. And you have to jump here, 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 and here up to the middle and avoid the trucks. Then when you get on there, you have to jump on the log and then on a boat, and they're going this way, and you're trying not to land in the water. In order to eventually get to the other side. It's victory if you can get the frog over to the other side. Okay. Let's assume this is a business. The business is called Princes R Us. And the concept is that we have these frogs, and on the other side we have all these lovely young maidens who, when the frogs get to the other side, are going to kiss the frogs and turn them into handsome princes. So our money is made by getting the frogs over there and getting to the maidens. If they're all flattened along the way, you know, no princes, we're out of business. Okay. So what do we do? In most of our organizations, what happens? You call the training department, and all of a sudden now we've got a whole setup of a curriculum on froggy training. And what do we have to train them on? How to hop? Well, probably know how to hop, and maybe have to hop faster and harder. How to judge traffic? Remember the course on how to judge traffic? Trucks coming this way, cars coming this way, how fast they're going, how to judge how much time you have to hop. Don't forget that. Then when you get to the other side, how to hop onto the logs. It's a whole setup we got. Froggy training. Then we have to have the froggy competence curriculum, the competence mapping, so we have to make sure what is all the things that a frog needs to do. And frog takes these six courses and gets, 80% on the test on each one of those courses. And obviously he must be competent. And he's ready to go jump on the other, across the road, and we just pray he doesn't forget 70% of what he learned and get squashed. This is the training we're doing in our organization. We're doing froggy training. What's the solution? From a business point of view, what's the solution? Build a bridge across the road. But we're not doing that. We're spending our time on froggy training. Can we eliminate the steps that aren't necessary? Can we eliminate the work that isn't necessary? Can we focus on what the performance is, what the goal is for the business, and say, well, maybe that barrier we've set up here, that hurdle, isn't worth spending time going through. Maybe they don't need to learn it. I know, I never could figure that out. Yeah, that's a... I would have designed it all differently. okay, but that's what we are doing. I want to come back to this again, this form, and see how this might be carried out in similar situations. Now, Matthew did a wonderful job. In going through on the IRA, but he still took quite a bit of time. I need another volunteer, someone who loves IRS forms as much as Matthew does. Do you have another volunteer? Someone? Anyone? Okay, come on.
I'm assuming
I'm going. Something that, okay. This is Jocelyn. Okay, so just click the okay and we'll start. Oh, you're left here.
Yes,
okay. All right. So let's use the same example. So the gross distribution was $10,000. Again, we've put active guide on top of this. She puts in $10,000 and clicks okay. Then the recipient is 30 years old. Okay. All right. Thank you. You're through. Goodbye. The task is done. As you turn around, you'll see that we've just completed the task for you. We have done the rest of it because what is this job all about? This job is about getting that data to the IRS. It's not about learning this form. And you may only do this two or three times a year. Teaching people to learn to do this, if we can find some way, and I agree, if there's chances of serious errors, you've got to deal with that or breaking down and so on. I'm not discounting that. But I think we need to move in that direction without losing sight of what you were trying to suggest, that we don't want to go totally automated. But this we can. And there... Right. Yeah, that's exactly it. This is not an act of, let's say, everything we do we can turn into this. This is very much a serious, like, this is what we do, the job. We have to determine what has to be done. We have to look at this from a business problem, a business solution, say, what can we do? And if we can get rid of the hurdle and it's not going to affect anything and it's not going to be, let's do it. But if it needs, as in the case of the lead router, it's still going to need the business analyst, then we have to provide that as part of it. But that's part of what we have to do. But that's what we need to be thinking. Unfortunately, many of our organizations, training department, go put together training courses, and we're teaching the frogs how to leap. And what I'm suggesting is we want to go even further than that, because a lot of what we've done, we say, well, we're going to, at each point in the stage, we're going to give somebody a lot of information. I'm trying to suggest that with the training wheels, that one of the things we can do is try to structure that task more to reduce the errors and to enable someone with less and less of that knowledge to build that knowledge into the application in a way, to prevent the mistakes if we can, or build a structure that will mitigate and reduce the chances of mistakes. So it's not just here the information, you can read it now or read it when you're actually doing the work, but go another step and actually change the interface, change the environment, what the person is reacting to. Because the environments and the interface that people are facing in their jobs are often ones that are, make it far more complicated to do what needs to be done. How can we change that? So it's not just in-time information. We're trying to go to the point of really structured. It means more analysis, more work, as someone said, much more precise than we do in a training program. Because you really have to understand this and understand the process and what can be done and what shouldn't be done and so forth, and all the branching and so on. But the end result of two or three people doing that, as opposed to the people putting through dozens of training classes, it's well worth it. And the amount of time that you've saved and the amount of money, well, they pay for it. It's not hard to, when you start taking away those, what's the cost of productivity time of somebody having to go through to learn how to do all these hurdles, you start adding that up, it's not hard to do ROI on that. Even though it's going to take more work. The problem is we've decimated our training departments. There's nobody around who can do that. But that's what we have to do. We have to look at these issues, go into the business areas, and when they're asking for training solutions, to talk in terms of business problem and talk in terms of how we might provide structure that will help people get through, improve their performance, without saying what our goal is and what we have to do is immediately focus on the performer, make the performer a better jumper, a better hurdler, better frog, or whatever it might be. Well, there's only a couple of applications that will do what we have done here. There are a number of applications that will give you sort of help cue cards along the way. But the only two applications I know that do this is ActiveGuide and another application called Epiplex, which is from a company called Epiance. Epiplex. And the company is Epiance, E-P-I-A-N-C-E. Everything they name is Epi something or other. So, but that's a much higher level. This only works with web browser-based applications. Epiance can work across large number of applications. It's more of an enterprise-wide type of thing, and it can do that. Others, all they're doing is providing help along the way. Those are the only two that are really going to figure out what you've done, interact based on what you've done, read what you've done, make some decisions, help you get through that. Those are the only two that will do that. Pardon?
The electronics.
Yeah, we can do all that. Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff we can do. All this is, by the way, is JavaScript sitting on top of an application. It does not touch the application code. This is all done without talking to anybody in the IT department. And we can do the same type of thing with these tools. We could go and develop a tool to help people speed up they're doing eBay and present it to them without ever talking to people at eBay. It's all done externally. It's all done with a little JavaScript file which is created, and the tool helps create that. But it's all done. You don't have to go to the training to your IT department and say, well, we want to put something on top of the application. They're just going to change a few little things. You don't mind, do you? Well, you know the answer. No. But you don't even need that. And this is the beginning of where tools are going to go. And what I'm trying to get at, it's a concept of creating that environment, of that safe environment, so that by very nature of using that environment, like Buckminster Fuller's quote, requires that you think differently in a way. And the more you can structure that environment, that you can eliminate mistakes and so on, the better. But even if you can't, at least you're creating an environment that guides somebody through that process and giving them the help they need, so you're not relying on very ineffective method of we're going to give them a training course, hope they remember it, and when they get back on the job, and maybe they'll be able to do it, and they're going to wind up on the phone with the help desk. Right. So, what I just showed you, where did the IRS form, where did the learning take place? Well, there wasn't that much learning. They didn't need to learn it. We decided it wasn't necessary for them to know they had to check this box or that box because that wasn't their job. If I'm doing 100 of these, learning is not what I want to do. I want to get the things done. Was the learning necessary? I'm saying no. Was competent performance achieved? Yes. And where were the cost savings? Obviously, the cost savings is on it. Okay. So the power of training wheels. And here, as you can see, I've gone through my metaphor of the training wheels. I've motorized them. push down the hurdles and put the frog on top of it. So I hope somehow this is all coming together. But it's all the same part of the training wheels is that it maximizes performance efficiently by embedding learning opportunities into work activities. So you learn as you're doing. It makes learning a byproduct of carrying out the work. If it's necessary to learn, it makes it a byproduct of that, rather than the goal. I learn in the process of doing, as opposed to I learn then I do. And making learning irrelevant where it needs to be irrelevant. So which represents a better investment for your organization? Creating as much training as possible for the least amount of money, which is what our current mode is. Churning out as many courses as we can. Or changing the work environment to enable employees to perform competently with as little training time. I mean, this is built in. This is the way many of us do. I mean, coming out of training, we put a value on that. We say, well, people have to learn, they have to know, and so forth. There's no question about that. Part of what I'm saying is that this is becoming less and less possible because there's so much we need to know. There's so many tools we need to know. I mean, I'm working one job, and next tomorrow this person leaves, and all of a sudden I'm doing their job, and I have to start using the tool that they've been using to do something. I've had no training on it, and how am I going to get training by 2 o'clock this afternoon because I've got to get something done? This is the world we're living in. And there's a lot of things we're doing that the goal really, that we've created tools or we've created processes in order to get something done, but they break down and they're presenting more of a barrier. We should be able to say, I want to do this, here's what I want to do, and as quickly as you get them to actually do it. The more you have to learn something in between. any other thoughts on this? Because your comments were, I think, key ones that people get concerned with, and I don't want to make light of it. Well, everything in our world is going that way. Too. I mean, software keeps changing, puts more wizards in, more stuff that does automatically. Gee, I used to be able to do this, now I don't have to do that anymore. I don't have to crank the front of my car anymore because I just turn the key type of thing. So it's part of that. And business is looking for ways to do that, but training is looking to ways of let's make work within what you're stuck with rather than making a decision we can make a bigger impact if we can help to cut through some of that. I thank you for coming. It's been a pleasure. Yep.